This is a replay of the Tuesday night, December 19th, WGN show. We started at 11 right after the game. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings, and unless sports preempt us, that's from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number from OneVoip. For the world's best customer service, it's OneVoip. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. We've got 2 hours to spend together and plenty on my mind, probably more on yours, but what I really need to do is beg you for your votes on your guilty pleasures. Now, this is a poll. I do it every few years when there's a real request for it, and a number of you this year said, yeah, we want to talk about our guilty pleasures, and what that means, of course, every year we vote for the world's worst hit records. And conversely, there are those records that you're embarrassed to say you like. Hell, you love them, and you're embarrassed to claim you even know them. Those. And so those are the guilty pleasures. And all we ask is they be hits, any decade, any genre, as long as they're hits. And we compile the list. It's never attracting the same interest as the world's worst, which is exactly what I'd expect, because people are much more likely to complain than they are to praise. And, of course, I'm also asking you to lay yourself bare and tell me about the most embarrassing thing in your life, which is the fact that, you know, you really do like the Monkees or whatever. So that's the poll, and why I am pleading on bended knee almost for your votes is that I've got the same problem I had with the world's worst hit records about a week before we finally got a tally, and that is I've got a humongous tie. I've got five front runners, and no, I'm not going to tell you what they are. And then right after those five comes a tie as big as a damn zip code. So I need to know from you what those guilty pleasures are. And we admitted to the innocence last night. Both Fran and I like Merzidotes. Of course, I have a soft spot for Anders and Poncia in general. I like them when they were the trade winds. And later they went on to legitimate careers, too. But New York is a Lonely Town was a big hit, and of course I didn't really like it. I liked Mind Excursion. All right, so I've fessed up. Now it's your turn. 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh. All right, so I was saying we often talk about people behaving badly, and it is getting worse, and that I think tells you more about the mood of the country, maybe the world in general. It seems over the top. But this was one story that was set apart from all the others as far as I'm concerned. Talk about entitlement. All right, so here we are. We'll set the scene for you. We're in Central Florida. We're in Sanford, Florida. And where there is a Wawa, because Wawa has expanded to Florida. And Wawa is the world's best convenience stores. They make everything fresh 24 hours a day. They'll make you a sandwich while you wait. All that said, they also sell gas, and that's a more recent thing for Wawa, what they do. And so they're your basic gas station convenience store. And so it was that there was a couple who, selected several items they wanted to buy, and your usual convenience store junk. And they checked out. But when they checked out, they realized that in addition to everything that they had purchased, there was a bottle of wine. They said, we didn't purchase that. Okay, so now in walks this 31-year-old female who, to give her the benefit of the doubt, mistakenly put her bottle of wine on the counter with the couple's order. Mistakenly or not, when the couple realized it, they said, it's not our wine. We're not paying for that. Give us a refund, which Wawa was, of course, willing to do. But the couple were facing this woman, this 31-year-old female who had placed her bottle of wine on their order. Now, I don't know how often this woman does this, by the way, and has she gotten away with it before? It's hard to know. But the bottom line is when they asked for a refund, she got agitated and said, why can't you just pay for my bottle of wine? And there's logic. And then she stepped up her game, began to threaten the woman and her boyfriend before picking up the wine bottle and striking the woman in the head with it. Well, then she starts beating the guy over the head with it, and he passes out. And yeah, completely knocked out. And she continued to make threats, threatening to kill them, and attempted to hit them again with the wine bottle as she retreated to the parking lot. I don't know with or without the wine bottle. That part was uncertain, but apparently she had called an Uber who, seeing her state, absolutely refused to drive her, so she left the gas station on foot. It wasn't long before police could catch up with her. She was arrested on 2 counts of aggravated battery with a deadly weapon, the bottle of wine, and booked into the Seminole County Jail. And I read this and I thought, you know, I understand that today people feel more entitled than ever. And I understand that people are, at this point, on their last nerve. But this was so over-the-top nuts, I had to share it with you. So, yeah, after I read that, I thought, my day isn't going so badly after all. Yeah, so 888-876-5593 is 8888-RALEIGH. And John and I often talk Tuesdays and Wednesdays, particularly after games. There very often is a dearth of callers. Now, it is the Raleigh James I Hate the Holidays Club, but I could be forced to play Christmas music. Well, the one I like, anyway. Yeah, Gee Whiz, It's Christmas by Carla Thomas. But other than that, see what's going on in the world at large. Yeah, well, we've got plenty of other stories to share with you, no doubt. But what do we have here? We have a number of people, including Cornell Dupree, who would have been 81 today, jazz guitarist, R&B act, born in 1942 in Fort Worth, and grew up with King Curtis, and they were childhood pals in Fort Worth, and both went on to incredible music careers, and sadly, both dead, King Curtis by virtue of homicide, and not necessarily intentional. It was a deal where he was in the wrong place at the wrong time and got threatened on his steps, and someone killed him. Yeah, I don't know that they had any idea who he was, but nonetheless, as far as Cornell Dupree died in 2011 in Fort Worth of emphysema. He was actually on a list waiting for a lung transplant. Did a lot of session work. You might have heard him on Brooke Benton's Rainy Night in Georgia. Yeah. What else do we have? We have Professor Longhair, who would have been 105 today, born in Bogalusa, Louisiana in 1918 and died in his sleep in 1980. So Keith Richards turned 80 yesterday. I know, we're getting older. Used to be rock and roll was teenagers, and now it's people who are, well, octogenarians in this case. Maurice White would be 82, born in Memphis, moved to Chicago, and of course you probably know all that, and was in the Pharaohs, and was a session drummer for Chess, and when Red Holt left to start Young Holt, Maurice White became the drummer for the Ramsey Lewis Trio, and yeah, they produced, he and Charles Stepney produced for Denise Williams and for the Emotions, yeah. And a number of other things as well. Sadly, died in his sleep in 2016, Parkinson's, 74 years old. All right, so 888-876-5593, 8888-RALEIGH. And Leah in Marcus Hook, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Thank you, Raleigh. How are you tonight?
Well, I'm here, and I'm delighted that you called. So what's going on?
Well, I heard about this lawsuit. The Sisters of St. Francis of, well, they say they're from Philadelphia, but they're actually in Aston, PA, the ones that started Newman College.
Yes.
They're suing the manufacturer of the AR-15s, the guns.
Yeah, no, I understand.
And it's not... It's because they own stock in the company, and they have for years.
Yeah.
And they were fine with owning stock in the company until all these mass murders started happening with the AR-15s, and then they just started the lawsuit like a couple weeks ago, I guess.
I hope they lose their shirts. That's about all I can tell you.
There's something I don't understand. What? They said that they're suing because they don't like the way that they're promoting the guns, they're advertising the guns.
This is a heavily political topic, Leah. And so I can't really go there fully. All I can all I can tell you is a gun is an inanimate object. It doesn't jump off counters and shoot people. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. And I hope it's miserable for them, but I'd like to end it there. Because this, this absolutely gets horribly political.
Right. Okay.
So, yeah. And you see these things occasionally is all I'll say. So it's interesting, by the way, that in this case they own shares of a stock, which anybody who is alive, breathing, and able to read knows what Smith and Wesson do. So hopefully some of the political talk show hosts will have fun with this.
I just thought it was wacky that nuns owned stock in Smith and Wesson.
Well, I don't know how they owned it. Most likely they own it by virtue of they have somebody who is investing their money. And when it comes to that, I'm not sure that it's ever a wise decision to make your investment decisions based upon your emotional relationship to what the company does. I care more about the balance sheet.
And then I heard that if they win, the money goes to Smith & Wesson, not them.
Well, we'll see. You know, again, like I say.
And I don't get why that
Well,
there, the
there's there are several reasons. But like, call one of the political talk shows. I bet you they'll have a field day.
Okay.
But,
all right.
But yeah, appreciate the call a lot. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
All
Bye.
Right, so 888-876-5593 is 8888. Raleigh. Yeah, a lot of interesting court decisions in the last few days, and we're going to ignore all of them. Elaine is in Oak Forest. Welcome to WGN Radio.
Hey, hello, Raleigh.
How are you?
I have a guilty pleasure.
Yes, all right. What do you got for me?
Well, I'm not sure if it was a hit. She by the Monkees.
Yeah, it was a moderate hit.
Moderate hit?
Yeah.
I love that song.
But you love it. Okay, well, that's all that matters. Did you buy it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I have their albums.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so when it came out, you liked it enough to go plunk down your dollar and buy one?
I sure did.
All right. Well, that absolutely qualifies. Thank you for admitting it, Elaine.
Oh, you're very welcome.
All right. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
So 888-876-5593-8888 Raleigh. Yeah, we've had several admissions of monkey songs that that people hold near and dear. And I don't share any of them, but that's quite all right because, you know, I've got my tawdry list too. So by all means, though, keep those votes coming because I absolutely need to break some ties here. And yeah, we get some email votes too, and that's fine, but I'm so behind in email. And I thought today that I would catch up. You know, I thought, well, today's the day I'm going to really catch up on this. And then I had a couple of sponsors on the radio stations I own who decided at the last minute, emergency change of copy. Yeah, so that that was most of my afternoon. Anyway, I digress. We're going to talk about Bobby Fuller. Well, we've done that several times, but James in Oregon, maybe he's got news I don't have. So we'll review that and play one of Jimmy P's requests next right here on WGN Radio.
Never, no, will I let you go.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. That's the Jive 5. Yeah, has Eugene Pitt ever made a bad record? I don't think so. Never Never, 1961 on Belltone. And it was Jimmy P who requested that, and more than happy to play it. We've got one more of his last six-pack that only had five records to play, and we'll do that next. So in the meantime, 888-876-5593, 8888. Raleigh, well, I ask for votes. Hopefully I'm going to get them. Jeffrey is an awesome. Welcome to WGN Radio. Jeffrey, have we lost you?
Yeah.
There you are. Okay, I didn't want to lose you. You've got a vote.
Yeah, first of all, I always loved them. I know you shouldn't love them, but I did. I was a kid. And the three songs, because they came out as a group on this, I don't know if it's a record or not, but I know you know at least one of them, and that's the Royal Guardsman, you know, Snoopy and the Red Baron.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's a whole soap opera about that.
Yeah, they did two more, The Return of the Red Baron and Snoopy's Christmas.
Well, did other things. They also did I Say Love and a few other things. And the guy who wrote Snoopy versus the Red Baron also wrote Abraham, Martin, and John for Dion. So, yeah, there's a lot of things about, a lot was going on in Ocala, Florida in the 60s, that's for sure. So we'll put you down for the Royal Guardsman in the Snoopy trilogy.
Yeah, a couple of other things.
Yes.
First of all, if you can, because there's two songs that I heard in the last year or so, and I really kind of like them. The one, The Sea of Love, do you remember that one?
Oh, of course. It was a huge record. Phil Phillips, absolutely.
And the other one was Pretty Little Angel Eyes.
Oh, sure. I think that was Phil Spector's best production. I don't care what anybody says. And the last time I was in Yuma, I actually went to Curtis Lee's grave there. And sure enough, they have a picture of the Dunes 45 right on his gravestone.
Yeah, and I wanted to mention the other thing is that they did a trilogy of Marty Feldman's movies. And uh-huh. They would show his eyes and his face.
Right.
And that's how I really liked it, because they showed his face, the pictures of him on Channel 9, WGN, the movies.
Uh-huh.
And they would show his face and his eyes, because he did Young Frankenstein.
Yes.
And while they were showing his face and his eyes, they were doing that Pretty Little Angel.
Oh, my God. Well, somebody's got a sense of humor.
It was funny with that.
Yeah.
And the last one is, I'm trying to think about it real quick. Did you know how, BJ Records had a husband and wife team that owned that record company?
Well, Vivian and Jimmy, that's why it's V&J. And Vivian's brother was also heavily involved. Yeah, and you can't forget Ewart Abner, who was a very driving force.
Did you know how they got the Beatles contract?
Yes, I do. I know that whole story. They weren't looking, and boy, do I ever know that story. Hang on, and I'll give it to you in the Cliff Notes.
Because I heard, I was going to tell you what I heard, and I don't know if it's the same as you, but they lost it. They lost the contract.
No, all right. I'll explain it after the news. Stay right where you are. Don't go away. All right.
Okay.
So, not exactly. We'll pick it up right there, right here on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that is the Impressions County Fair. And that was another one. That was actually the last of Jimmy P's current group of requests, and happy to play it. So we're talking to Jeffrey and Alsop. You still with me, Jeffrey?
Yeah, okay. I can hear you.
All right, here's the deal. VJ was originally all R&B, all soul labels. And in 1961, Jerry Blavitt convinced Ewart Abner to look at a group that his friend Bob Crewe was working with, the Four Seasons. Ultimately, Abner signs the Four Seasons, and he has success for the first time with a white act. He wasn't expecting that and all that. Well, at that point, he's thinking, well, you know, we could do more. And he made a deal with EMI, and Capital of Great Britain. And the record he wanted was by Frank Ifield. I Remember You, and the follow-up, I'm Confessing, but I Remember You was the record. And so EMI did a deal where they leased Frank Ifield to VJ in the United States. And in that deal, they threw in the Beatles. Now, back then, the Beatles were turned down by virtually everybody. And believe me, they tried. You know, they'd have one record out on Swan or whatever. And then, you know, there's an MGM and yada, yada. So here comes VJ. All right. So they put out the Frank Ifield record and have quite a bit of success with it. They put out a Beatles single and have nothing. They kind of forgot about it. Well, when it came time for EMI to take back the rights to Frank Ifield, they forgot to take the rights to the Beatles. It just never was in the contract. They forgot about it. This was not a hit group. Who cared? Well, 6 months later, of course, here come the Beatles, and they're suddenly big here. Well, VJ still technically had the rights. Now, they understood that this was going to be a lawsuit, and their calculated decision at that point was to put out the masters they had, and that's why they put out the album Introducing the Beatles, because they had those masters, and that had been part of the Frank Ifield deal. And they started to fight it legally. Well, actually, EMI came after then. And so they put out and sold this record for over a year before the legal bills were greater than the profits they were making. So that's how VJ got the Beatles.
Well, I'm not doubting you at all, no. But I heard something else, too. I don't know if you heard this or not, but supposedly, I don't know who it was, but they supposedly gave a great deal of money to VJ Records to help promote the Beatles over here.
No.
And let me finish what I heard then. That it was the husband that took the money, and instead of using it to promote the Beatles, he went out and bought about 50 limousine cars.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, I understand where you're going with it. Actually, the guy who was a problem was Abner, because he would gamble away the company's profits. He'd go to Las Vegas and gamble them. But no, the Beatles, the EMI never paid VJ to promote them. In fact, when the Beatles became popular, that's the last thing EMI wanted, was VJ to have any rights.
Well, anyway, I heard that simply that the wife and the husband had an argument over that.
And
they went their separate ways eventually after they lost everything because
it's a fine story. It's not accurate. It's a fine story. I'm not saying people didn't enrich themselves.
No, I've read it somewhere.
You can read it anywhere, but it has very little, if anything, to do with the collapse of VJ. And you can't talk about the collapse of VJ without bringing Ewart Abner into the story. And, you know, to say that the Beatles were responsible for the collapse, the only way that I would...
I'm not saying they were ever responsible.
Right.
I'm just saying the guy, supposedly took the money and bought some cars.
Yeah, okay. Well, and you can read that all you want. I'll just agree to disagree.
Okay, that's fine. I'm just telling you what I read, that's all.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But anyway, you have a great night.
All right, thanks.
You
appreciate
it.
Yeah, people write anything. And, yeah. All right, so there we have that. I think we're also going to discuss another old story as we talk about Bobby Fuller here in a while. But let's get some votes before we do anything else, because that's obviously top of mind for me. All right, so James, let's see, Elaine in Oak Forest. You voting for me, Elaine? What do you got? Elaine? Or did we take Elaine's caller? We might have. All right. Do I have no other votes? I want other votes. Oh, well, we got Jeffrey and Alsop, so we had that. All right. Well, then we'll move right along. Jan and Dallas got a question. All right. Maybe I've got an answer. What's up, Jan?
Hi. Blessings to you and John. Wonderful show last night. I would like, would you tell me the difference between rock and roll and rhythm and blues?
Well, that's an opinion. That's not a fact. And the first thing is that music doesn't lead, it reflects. So you can't really talk about music without talking about the times and everything that's involved, some of which is musically related and some of which is not. But when you look at what was starting to happen by 1950, firstly, the big bands have sort of gone away, and now you've got a lot of pop standards and some great records, but pop standards were not rock and roll or rhythm and blues. And so you had R&B, and it was popular in certain segments, and not just segments of African America, but certain segments, but it wasn't that mainstream overall. You also started to have offshoots of country. Of course, originally country and Western were used together as a phrase, and ultimately those are two different things, including Western swing and country. But you started to get rockabilly. And so you've got, at the same time, you've kind of got rhythm and blues, you've got rockabilly also, and ultimately it is almost a merger of those two that are going to produce it. Now, the words rock and roll for music, that came from 60 Minute Man by Billy Ward and the Dominoes, which of course was a song about making love for an hour. And they in the chorus they say, gonna rock 'em and roll 'em all night long, I'm a 60 Minute Man. Well, of course, it wasn't lost on anybody what rock and roll meant, but Alan Freed took it and said, that's a rock and roll record, and he coined the phrase. And so that's how the phrase was born. But there were a number of other things involved as well. You know, this is the kind of thing that could be an entire set of books and a set of encyclopedias. You also have format changes, not of radio, but of how records are made. Prior to 1949, everything was a 78. Well, now, in 49, RCA has debuted the 45, and of course the competitor was Columbia with the 33. But what this did is you had a number of R&B labels that also owned their pressing plants, and in some cases that put them out of business because they couldn't retool. They made 78s or not, you know, it was like that. And so you had that question. Then, of course, you had the major record labels, the Columbias of the world, but they didn't want to touch any of this with a fork. They wanted nothing to do with rock and roll. And as far as R&B, they were going to have it in other labels, you know, in case of Columbia, OKEH would be, you know, you had the same thing with RCA and on and on it went. So you got all these little independents. Well, of course, now you've got the issue of how to distribute it, because the independent has a problem, because if he doesn't have national distribution, at best he's going to have a hit that's on the chart a long, long time, but it's never going to get very high on the chart because it isn't happening simultaneously. So you had to add national distribution to this. All of these things, by the way, I'm glossing over, have many, many points. The jukebox industry is huge in this story. I'll just leave that there for the moment. But ultimately, it was a number of factors came together, including the blending of musical styles that gave us what we would call rock and roll.
Wow, what an explanation.
Well, now, by the way, I also didn't bring radio into the mix, which I should have. Because there were a lot of things going on with radio. The problem in 1950 is that television existed. Of course, it existed before that, but by the early 50s, you're starting to see it everywhere. And, you know, you'd look at the trades and they'd have articles like, is radio dead? You know, that kind of thing. Well, radio in terms of the way it was formatted with, you know, soap operas and other shows. That network radio, yeah, network radio had a big problem. Now, of course, the networks didn't give up right away because they were still making money, so they hung on to their shows and Art Linkletter or whoever. In any event, here is a great opportunity for people with virtually no money to speak of to buy little radio stations that suddenly are not valuable because they're not network affiliates, they're independents, maybe they're daytimers, maybe they just cover a small area compared to a whole market, and you had independent guys picking up stations for $25,000. And so what do they do with it? And then you get into the history of Top 40, which is a fascinating history, but probably we can talk about that some other night. It's outside your question. So radio was certainly a factor as well.
That's great. Well, I'll ask about the Top 40 next time.
Okay.
And thank you so much. Okay.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling.
Okay.
Appreciate
Bye-bye.
It. All right. So 888-876-5593. 8888 Raleigh, and we will get to Bobby Fuller. James in Oregon wants to talk about that, but John in Covington has brought up something that, yes, unfortunately, is true. So, John, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hey, Raleigh. Just about every day, every afternoon, I listen to Phil Henry podcast, and it's daily is free, and what he's trying to do is he's trying to entice you into a membership,
sure.
which I'm considering.
Sure.
Anyway, today, before he started, you could tell he was a little shaken up. He had mentioned that a gentleman in the radio business, a guy he really thought a lot of by the name of Jim Ladd, had passed away.
He did. He did.
Yeah.
Had a heart attack. Yeah, I did know.
Yeah.
And, you know, he went the way we all want to go, which is suddenly. And, of course, that's a shock to those of us left behind. He was an L.A. original. He was actually born in Los Angeles in Linwood, I think. But in any event, he was not my cup of tea because, of course, I despised progressive rock. But that said, it produced some very interesting talent. And Jim originally was on a little Long Beach station, and this would have been like 69, and then KNAC in Long Beach. And then a couple of years later, when ABC was changing their FMs to progressive, he went to KLOS. And he was there, and then he went to the Mighty Met, KMET, in about 74, stayed there for 10 years, and went back to KLOS, and then back to KMET, and then back to KLOS. Literally, it was like that kind of thing. And they were both AOR stations in Los Angeles. And then since 2012, he's been on Sirius. And so he was in a couple movies, and there were a couple movies that supposedly were patterned after him. I mean, he affected a lot of people who liked that kind of music. And so it certainly is a great loss. As I say, to me personally, I couldn't tell you a thing because, you know, while he's sitting down with Led Zeppelin and, you know, all that, I don't care. That does not diminish his contributions. And everybody I know who worked with him liked him. I never heard a bad thing about this guy.
Well, I'll tell you, like I say, Phil went on for 15 minutes.
Well, yeah, because he probably...
how great he was.
Right, he probably was a big influence to him, and Phil was an L.A. guy, and at the right age for that, of course. I could see that. And Jim's wife is also in the business, not so much in radio, but she does a lot of voiceovers, including for, like, gaming and things like that. And
oh, wow.
She's done some singing and poetry and all that. So, trying to think of her name. I can't think of her right now. But in any event,
I just thought I didn't know if you knew. And,
yeah, I did know.
Yeah.
I did
okay.
know. And like I say, those things are... to me, they're double-edged, because on the one hand, for those of us left behind, when it's a sudden death like that, you know, just heart attack and you're dead overnight, you know, that's
right.
Like, oh, my God. But to the person, I mean, tell me, has anybody ever said, dear Lord, let me linger? So his exit is the
no
way I want to go. Right. That's the way I want to go. So,
three guilties before I...
Yes. All right. What you got?
Mac the Knife by Bobby Darin.
Okay.
All my classmates.
Yeah.
I graduated in 76.
Oh, yeah.
They knew. They caught me at Grant's department store buying a remake of Mac the Knife, and they gave me the business for quite a while.
I'm sure.
And then my other two really go back. It's Glenn Miller Pennsylvania 65,000.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, I love that.
And of course, then if you, by the way, if you love that, you know what that phone number is.
It's yeah, I watched the Glenn Miller story.
Yeah.
It pretty much
explained right, the Cafe
it.
Rouge. Yeah. Okay. So what's the third one?
Yeah. Oh, the third one is Benny Goodman with Gene Krupa on drums, 1937. Sing, sing, sing.
Oh, my God.
It still stands up. It still stands up.
It takes forever. When I had to play that music, I remember I played that once. That damn record was so long. And I remember the next time I played it, I said, and now here's one with a drum. So, all right. Thanks for calling.
God bless you.
Appreciate
Ron.
It.
See ya.
All right. So 888-876-5593. We'll pick it up right there with a Bobby Fuller story coming up on WGN Radio.
Jungle.
I'm Riley James, and those are the Spaniels. Don't You Go. Yeah, Jimmy P had mentioned that one too. VJ, 1955. It actually was a flip side of Dua, and a fine song it was. But then again, Spaniels kind of like when I talk about the Jive 5. Did the Spaniels ever make a bad record? Oh, I can't find one. All right, so 888-876-5593. Let us see what James in Oregon is up to tonight. What's going on, James?
Hey, good evening. Hey, this Bobby Fuller thing, I don't know why his name popped in my head a few weeks, a few nights ago, but I just wanted to, I asked my Amazon device, how old is he? And they said, oh, he's dead, you know.
Well, yeah, and, boy. Yeah, now we're getting into the real conspiracy.
Yeah, so anyways, I asked, you know, what did he die from? And then they said he died of homicide, and then they said it was unsolved. And I tried to find out on my Amazon device what the deal was, and I can't. They just said it was unsolved. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, you know, you kind of know a lot of stuff, so I thought maybe you had something more than that. But
yeah,
reach out to a guy that has a program off of L.A. Called Unsolved with Steve Gregory, and he deals with a lot of L.A. area police and stuff like that on cold cases. So I reached out to him, but I haven't heard anything from him. But I don't expect to. But I just thought maybe they would do some research if it was in the L.A. area, you know.
It's a well-known story, and Unsolved would be a good way to put it, but unsolved means that they were trying to solve it and they weren't. But let me first say that as much as I stand by 100% what I'm talking about when I talk about things like VJ Records and what happened there, I mean, I know that within an inch of those details. Now, when we're talking about Bobby Fuller 4, we're into the world of conjecture. And believe me, I know all the possible stories, but the idea that he killed himself, no, I don't buy it for a minute. But Bobby Fuller was a guy from West Texas, El Paso area, and he was actually quite inventive and he idolized Buddy Holly. And in fact, his big hit, I Fought the Law, was a cover over one of the Crickets records. Sonny Curtis did it originally and wrote it. Hang on a minute. We'll pick it up there. I'll tell you all I know, and maybe you can decide. We'll talk about that, and we'll take your votes and everything else coming up on WGN Radio.
Well, breaking rocks in the hot sun, I fought the law and the law won. I fought the law and the law won. I miss my baby and a good fun. I fought the law and the law won. I fought the law and the law won.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. That's the original, The Crickets on Coral, and this was 1960 after Buddy Holly's death. Sonny Curtis wrote it in 58. They recorded it in 59. It didn't do anything then. Sonny was in the service for a while. I mean, yeah, and then came back. But nonetheless, the song was interesting. It did almost nothing for the Crickets, but a little group in Milwaukee, the Royal Lancers, covered it in 62. It was a local hit, nothing national. A couple of years later, Sammy Masters covered it like nothing. Now, the same time, Bobby Fuller is at home in El Paso, and he records it in his bedroom, basically, and has it on his own little record label that he's got there. It does nothing. Does a little in West Texas. They're playing it in El Paso and probably in Lubbock. And so it was that Bob Keane at Delphi had heard it. And he had one of his subsidiary labels was Mustang. And so he said, hey, I think I can do something for you boys. Come to L.A. And the Bobby Fuller 4 was born. So they re-recorded it in 1965. They didn't use the version from Bobby's basement or bedroom or whatever. But they actually went into a studio. It was Bobby and his brother Randy and a couple other guys. And 6 months after the big hit, Bobby Fuller is dead. And that's what James is talking about. All right, so now we know where we are musically, but we've got to back up here and take a look at this. Now, Bobby Fuller, by the way, was in college in Denton, and he came back to El Paso because his brother had been murdered and had nothing to do with music whatsoever. It was a horrible story. But in any event, he came back, and that's when he started having his own little labels, and he had a club and that kind of stuff. And he really was, with his little home studio, Mr. El Paso. And he wanted to emulate, no doubt about it, the Crickets and Eddie Cochran and things like that. So that was his goal. All right, but so here comes Bob Keane saying, think I can do something, and they go out to L.A. But Bob Keane was an interesting guy. He was originally in a big band. He was a musician. But more than anything, he was kind of a marketer, and so he'd come up with all these gimmicks. Well, the bottom line is that Bobby Fuller and the band didn't really like any of the gimmicks. So there's one where they did a whole Hot Rod album with KRLA, and there were other things that, there were questions. All right, so here comes I Fought the Law, and it's a big hit. And the group by this time is not too pleased with each other or with Keane because they don't like the direction that Keane wants to take them. You know, I Fought the Law notwithstanding, everything else was in a direction that they were not very happy with. And so you had all sorts of issues with that going on. But next thing that happens is Bob Keane gets involved with Morris Levy, you know, always a good name to talk about when we're talking about deaths and conspiracies. That's Roulette Records. And so there were many who thought that the deal that Keane had made with Levy for Bobby Fuller got out of joint when Bobby Fuller didn't want to go along with it. So initially he went to New York, he met Morris Levy and all that. But ultimately, you know, the band was pretty much abdicating. They don't want any part of it. And here is Bobby, who is basically saying, no, I'm not going to go do those things. And next thing you know, he's dead. All right. So that's where some of the rumors started, because a lot of people were thinking, oh, man, Morris Levy is involved. Well, you know what's going on there. But you really don't know. You know he didn't commit suicide. Nobody does that by drinking gasoline. It just isn't the way to go. You know, so, I mean, the whole set is just unlikely that would have been the case. And it was in his mother's Oldsmobile, but it turned out that the body already had signs of rigor, and the Oldsmobile had only been in that parking lot for a couple hours. And so, you know, you got a lot of stories like that, of course, gives more credence to there's a conspiracy there. So, you know, none of us know for sure. I love the theory that it was a bad reaction to LSD. That he was knocked off by the Manson family. That it was retribution for a dalliance with the girlfriend of a mob-connected nightclub owner. I will say Bobby Fuller was nothing if not prolific. He had in El Paso several children from various girls. But that, believe me, it wasn't a nightclub owner that he was messing around with the guy's wife. Yeah. And then they looked at Bob Keane. They say, well, you know, he's the third one that's dead. We got Sam Cooke, and we got Richie Valens, and now we got Bobby Fuller. Well, no, it probably wasn't Bob Keane. But Morris Levy, you know, it does make you raise an eyebrow, and I don't know. But so what we do know is before Fuller's death, Bob Keane had signed an exclusive distribution deal with Roulette, and they were counting on the Bobby Fuller single and tour. And here comes Bobby and says, "I ain't going." And next thing you know, he's going all right, completely gone. So, you know, I don't think we'll ever know. That's pretty much the story. But, oh, man, Keane did all sorts of horrible things. Not only this record album with Carole, but, he had them be the Shindigs because he heard that the TV show needed a house band, and he thought if they could name the group after them, they'd get it. That didn't work, needless to say. And it was on and on, and I think that... There were all sorts of horrors that made the rest of the group say, see you later. And, you know, because they didn't want to just be Bobby's backing band. They wanted to be a band. But secondly, they didn't want to be a joke. And so that was the deal.
Yeah, okay. I was just interested because for some reason his name just popped in my head. Because I listen to music a lot, and maybe I heard a song by him, and I said, oh, I wonder where he's at, and you know, and then when I heard he was homicide and unsolved, and then I couldn't find out why, you know.
Well, and there were other backdoor dealings that I'm not mentioning up front because I don't think they had anything to do with the death. But Bob Keane allegedly had a deal with Liberty. Liberty is the one who distributed I Fought the Law originally, and Liberty didn't know that they didn't have a long term deal when he signed with Levy. So Liberty sued Keane. And, it was...
Well, it's, sounds almost like some of these rap groups where one record label shoots up to the other guys on the other labels and stuff, you know?
Well, you know, don't know. And again, the Morris Levy thing, that's just because it's sort of stereotypical for Morris Levy. But it's somewhat of a stretch. It's just like, you know, for many years, I firmly believe that Morris Levy had Jimmy Rogers beat to a pulp because Jimmy was asking for his royalties. But I had actually talked to him about it at one point, and he said, well, here's the problem. I wasn't asking about my royalties. I just let it lie. So, you know, who knows? Who knows?
Yeah, I was going to ask you, I left a message one time. I heard on the Opry, an old gentleman, because he's got to be about my age anyway. He's upper 70s now, but Robert Finley, he made his debut on Grand Ole Opry about a couple weeks ago, I think it was. And he played a guitar. When they brought him on, he said he played a guitar in the Army, and this was his debut. But when he asked him about how he got back into the music stuff, he said he had been a carpenter and he was losing his eyesight mm-hmm. around 2015, mm-hmm. and so he just went back into he started playing his guitar and stuff. I just wondered if you heard him. It sounds like he's a more of a blues type guy.
Yeah, that's what he was originally. I'm aware of him, but I am not that familiar with his work at all. And yeah. I've heard the story, and I know he was on the Opry, and he also, you know, appeared in clubs in Hamburg and other places like that. And so, so at some point on that to-do list, good luck. Don't stay up nights waiting. I'll try to find something, and maybe I'll hear it. But I know he's got another album, or at least it's a compilation album right now that he's on, and he's put out a dozen albums, like you said.
Yeah, he said he had two albums out, and he's coming up with a third one on there.
Yeah.
So some of my guilty pleasures is how about anything by the Paul Revere and the Raiders?
Well, you have to pick them. You can't do anything by, so tell me which
one. Okay. How about Indian Reservation?
Oh, okay, there you are. And you want Paul Revere's version, not Don Farden's. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So I didn't want to waste the call.
No, well, that's very good. I'm delighted for the vote. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right,
talk to
you
later.
Soon. All right, so 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh. Now, do I have more votes? I need votes. All right, Debbie and Raleigh's got some votes for me. So what are they, Debbie?
Okay, sorry about my voice. I don't know what happened to that. But the songs would be Jimmy Fortune, Castles in the Sand. Is that the name of it?
Castles in the Sand. Oh, my God. All right. Very good.
Uh-oh. There goes my credibility.
Yeah, that's good. I love it. Okay.
Well, I'm going downhill from here, I guess.
Well, let's hear the rest of them.
Let's Get Together.
Oh, God. Haley Mills. Oh,
I know.
God.
I know.
Okay.
Okay. Yakety Yak.
Okay. The Coasters.
Goody Goody.
Okay, and I assume we're talking Frankie Lyman's version.
I guess.
And the Teenagers.
Splish Splash.
Okay, yes, absolutely. Bobby Darin. All right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
And but I was going to tell you a real quick story about An Act of Kindness. One day I went to the post office to send off a Christmas, a birthday present. Excuse me. And then I brought the wrong card, and I couldn't tell by the face of the card because it was all flat. Mm-hmm. And that was before we had things that could read our debit cards and such for us.
Yeah.
And I picked up the wrong one, and I was so upset because I had the wrong card. And I was going to leave, and a girl behind me said, "Look, you look like you're about to cry." I said, "Well, I was just upset because I'd picked up the wrong card." And she said, "I'm going to pay for this. You go on." And so she took care of the $10 or $12 cost of the item that I was mailing off, and I still remember that to this day. I mean, that was 4 or 5 years ago, but it just goes to show there are good people out there too.
Absolutely, there are. No, there's no doubt about that. And I'm sure that probably on some level, more and more are rising to the occasion as things continue to kind of go downhill. But the amount of people who are doing things that are just beyond the pale, like the woman with the wine bottle, really does make you wonder.
Like that woman that had killed her mom and put her behind a wall in her basement.
It went
on for years.
Yeah.
It just goes to show, you think you've heard the rest of the story, but sometimes it just gets unreal.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, I'm glad you're doing better. I was concerned about your cough a few days ago. And
no,
I
just coughed.
I'm glad to know it was just something like what I've got.
And it'll be there.
It'll probably be there
forever.
It makes people wonder, you know.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
I'm glad that you're doing okay, and I love your show.
Okay, thanks for calling. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
All
right. Bye-bye.
Yeah, and I'd cough less if I'd eat better, that's for sure. But it's typical LPR cough, and for people who don't know that, they think, "Oh, my God, you're really sick." No, I'm just eating the wrong things and coughing like a banshee. But other than that, 888-876-5593 is 8888. Raleigh, we're going to get some more votes. Looking forward to that. Going to talk early TV with Andrew. going to talk, let's see, what are we doing here? Stories with James, of course. Yes, James was the one who got me that Wawa story. I'm not sure you can top that. All right, so all that and more coming up on WGN Radio.
Love you, love you.
I love you. There's nothing to hide. It's better than burning inside. I love you. No use to pretend. There, I've said it again. I've said it. What more can I say? Believe me, there's no other way. I just love you. And I will till the end. There I said it again. I tried to drum up a phrase that would sum up all that I feel for you. But what good are phrases? The thought that amazes is you love me. And it's so heavenly. Forgive me for wanting you so. There's one thing.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Well, that's Bob Keane Strikes Again. Sam Cooke, of course, was his big act, and couldn't resist getting him to do pop standards, but a fine version of There, I've Said It Again on Keane in 1959. All right, so what are we doing here? I believe Fran has some votes, something to add to the list. I can't wait. All right, Fran, let's hear them. Fran. Speak to me, Fran. I believe Fran is there somewhere, but apparently not by the phone. So we'll just leave her not by the phone, but when she realizes that we were on it, she can call us back. I hope she will. All right, so 888-876-5593. Andrew in Chicago, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Okay, you're off speaker now.
Okay.
Two questions. So I'll still go with the second one first. Which is more your wheelhouse, I guess. And it was something that I heard, I think, on your last show, prompted this question. And the question is, what was so interesting about FM? Like, why was there such a big push to get it out there, get it working? Like, what was unique about it compared to FM?
Well, you know, there's a number of things about FM in terms of how it propagates that allow for terrific fidelity. It also, it's impervious to some of the atmospheric problems with AM. Now, of course, it is line of sight, so other than sunspots, you're not going to get a lot of DXing. But for the most part, you'll get a beautifully clean signal. Now, Armstrong, and that's probably how it came out. I was talking a little about Major Armstrong, who leapt to his death in 1954 because, of course, he said, no one believes in my invention. Well, his invention needed a little refinement before it was going to work because early FM, the biggest problem with it was drifting. And literally, you could walk by the radio and it would drift. And that's why I've joked so many times when they did transit radio on FM in cities like Cincinnati and Kansas City. I say the buses turned the corner, but the signals didn't. So drifting was...
Well, like my Magnavox in 51. Literally, I'll tune the radio and I walk away from it and it's bad.
Right, that's right. And there's a reason for that. And many of those radios had something called an AFC switch, automatic frequency control, except it did utterly nothing. Hang on a minute. We'll pick it up right there, and it will continue a little bit about FM, whatever's on your mind, and hopefully your guilty pleasure votes. That's what I really want to know about. Right now, I want to know about what's going on in the world at large, and we'll find out on WGN Radio.
Care about. he's true to me. So girl, you better shut your mouth.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and there it is, the cookies. And I'm trying to think who requested that. I played it for a reason. That's right. There was a real reason here at some point. Let me find out who that was. All right. Oh, Dave and LaSalle wanted to hear Don't Say Nothing Bad About My Baby. I almost played several Cookies records, but that was his choice. Maybe his guilty pleasure. Who knows? So we're talking with Andrew in Chicago about I'm not sure why, FM, early FM, in terms of, well, Major Armstrong had leapt to his death, all right? FM and AM, to a degree, work the same way, but the difference is how the carrier wave is modulated, okay? So with AM, you're modulating the amplitude, the strength, and with FM, you're modulating the frequency, the number of times each second that the current changes direction. All right, now, with that in mind, modulating FM is going to not create the same amount of static and other problems that are inherent in this, but in the mix is the fact that these signals drift. And they drift for a lot of reasons. Well, one big one, actually. But the bottom line is how to fix that. And this is what Major Armstrong leapt to his death before anybody was able to do that. The drifting is because the local oscillator in the FM front section is just wide open. And so you're going to have that. And so what originally they did was these horrible AFC switches, and I shouldn't say horrible because, of course, they were trying to do something, but it wasn't great. And then ultimately, by I'd say the mid '60s, they came up with the field effect transistors, which worked in a different way and worked much better. So the real issue in the past was drifting. Once drifting was solved, you were left with a signal that was going to have overall a lot better fidelity than AM.
That's interesting. Before I get to my second question, which is the real one, I want to vote for that Haley Mills song from The Parent Trap that the other caller mentioned.
Oh, let's get together. Yes, another vote for Haley Mills. All right.
Yeah, I have to turn that down when I play it because I really don't want my neighbors to hear.
To know that you actually love it. I know there are some secrets that we want to take to the grave.
Oh, yeah. So the question is, what's your recollection of when the golden age of television fell? You know, like, I was watching, you know, from the Playhouse 90, and I always found it amazing that how we went from that to, what we saw in the late 50s, early 60s. I mean, what's your recollection?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I've never been a television fan, certainly in more recent decades, say the mid-50s on. But what I loved about early television was the spontaneity of local and live, because originally the networks were not providing programming around the clock. So these stations had to fill with all sorts of things. And some of them, as far as I'm concerned, were downright hilarious. They didn't always mean for them to be, but they were. And so I loved that, local and live aspect of early television, whether they were having some guy do the creature feature or some poor SOB be the kiddie show host or what have you. There were just some classic early television shows. They were not network. The network stuff was interesting, too, because a lot of that was, of course, live. But nonetheless, I liked the local aspect, and that would be unique to each market.
I guess that was it. Talk to you tomorrow or whenever.
All right, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. All right, so, and of course, Bandstand, long before Dick Clark, was an outgrowth of just that. WFIL-TV had a block that they had to fill because the networks weren't providing anything, and so they had Bob Horn. Originally, he was going to be introducing these movie clips because they had bought a service. Anyway, the movie clips were just god awful. And so Bob started playing records, and initially it didn't occur to him to have the kids dancing. That when he actually went to a soda fountain that was in the lobby of the building that housed I think WPEN, could have been WIP, but one of those two. He saw the kids would leave their sodas and dance to the jukebox, and he thought, hey, maybe there's something there. And that's how he came up with the idea of having them dance. And, you know, the local television dance shows in the 50s, you know, one is better than the next, because, again, you know, you look at some of this production and it's just wonderfully bad. So, I mean, there's no other way to put it. Wonderfully awful. And, yeah, that's, I probably have some gene that needs some checking, but yeah, I like the goofs more than the successes. So Fran called back. All right, Fran, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. I had a fast busy and I was gone. So
wow, I don't know either.
Anyway, let's see. I have a few more elusive butterflies.
Ah, Bob Lind. All right.
I kind of like that song. And I'm not, yeah, one of those, yes, I am ashamed to admit it, but...
No, you know, I didn't mind it until it became so oppressive in February of 1966 that you heard it every 3 minutes.
I know. I've gotten to the point where I like it again, but, you know, I liked it.
Yeah.
And then it got overplayed, and I got tired of it, and now I like it again.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of songs like that. Somebody mentioned We've Only Just Begun, so I wanted to second that.
Oh, my God. All right.
Yes. Yeah, I like the Carpenters. Hate to admit, but yeah, I like the Carpenters. I couldn't stand Close to You, but I liked a lot of the things the Carpenters did. I liked their harmonies, and I like Karen Carpenter's voice.
Yeah, she had a very interesting voice. The one song I played, All You Get From Love Is a Love Song, I loved that. I thought that was a great
song. That is a good song. Yeah. I haven't heard that in a long, long time.
Yeah.
It was great to hear that the other night.
Yeah, and Steve Eaton, the guy who wrote it, I like the blues version he did of that. Really nice. But,
yeah, that was nice. I had not heard that one before. Yeah.
Right, because
he
released it on his own label in his bedroom in Boise. That's why it didn't get a lot of action there. But
that's too bad. It's good.
Right, but I bought a copy. There were a couple other things on that little CD I liked. But in any event, Karen's voice was interesting in that she virtually had no power. Everything she did was close mic work. And she was great, but she wasn't able to play the drums and sing at the same time in concert because of that. And so she...
I can understand that. I couldn't play the piano and sing at the same time when I used to perform.
But, see, she considered herself a drummer, not a singer. And so she didn't like the role she was playing. The other thing is that her voice was... uniquely suited to those records. It was just terrific. And it's hard.
She put a lot of heart.
Right.
I mean,
but
know.
What's really hard to believe is her love was soul. She adored soul music. So here is a girl.
I can believe that.
Yeah,
I do believe that.
She just wanted to be a soul drummer. You know, it was just that simple. And you know, and there was bad family dynamics, unfortunately, that led ultimately
to death. In fact, I just started reading a book about the Carpenters, and I can't remember.
Well, when you read about her mother, and oh God, yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's a heartbreak, and you know, Richard doesn't skate off free, as far as I'm concerned, either. But the real thing was Mom. She was an amazing person, and I always kept that in mind, because most of the stuff they did I never wanted to hear again as long as I lived. It just wasn't my stuff. But I loved
yeah,
it.
Yeah, no, I can see that. And I, you know,
but you know,
I do, you know, and the lot of things that I like from the standpoint of I like to sing them.
Yeah.
Because I love to sing. I've done, you know, a lot of stuff. But anyway,
and some of it was
stuff, but never gotten anywhere.
Right,
but.
Some of it was interesting. Goofus, for instance, you know, that took a lot of courage.
Goofus?
Yes. You don't know Goofus?
No.
Oh, God. Oh, how do you not know Goofus? Let me see if I can hopefully get that on this computer. Yeah, I think I do have it on this computer. All right. Goofus. You don't know Goofus. All right. Well, you missed one. Here we go.
Hmm.
Used to say, sounds a little goofy to me.
Corn-fed chords appeal to me. I like rustic harmony. Hold a note and change the key. Hey, that's goofus.
Never heard it, huh?
Yep, now I remember now that you played it, yes. Yeah.
And that actually goes back to 1930. And in 19...
Yeah, I knew that was an old song, because I've heard it done by somebody other than the Carpenters. I know that.
Les Paul had a big version, but my favorite, and I'm real sweet on this guy, I loved his stuff, was Phil Harris.
Oh, I like him.
Yes, that's what I like about the South. That's my favorite.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah.
She's frying eggs and cooking hay.
That's right. Yeah. There's a place called Doo-Wah-Diddy. It ain't a town and it ain't a city.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, he was terrific. And of course, sadly, yeah. all he's known for is The Thing, which was the other side of Goofus.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah. You'll never get rid of the... Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes. And Chet Atkins recorded a version of Goofus in 1960. So yeah, the Carpenters did it. It was on that kind of a Hush album.
Oh, okay.
And I think it was the first single they had after Ticket to Ride that failed to make the top 40.
Yeah, I was trying to think of some other songs, my guilty pleasures, that other people might have voted on so I could help break a tie.
Yes, yes.
A lot of the ones I can think of, like another one is Hot Diggity Dogs.
Oh, okay.
Hot and let's see. Oh, there was a song, I don't know who did it, I don't know if it was a hit, Daisy a Day.
Oh, Judd, yes, absolutely, Daisy a Day was a big hit.
That's another one of my guilty pleasures.
Oh, yeah, well, that, you know, that's typical country, you know, those tearjerkers.
Yeah, those are the ones that I most hate to admit that I like.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, I don't know, it just goes against, I don't know.
No, that
goes against my...
That was big Judd Strunk. Whatever happened to Judd Strunk? Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm going to look that up. What happened to Judd Strunk? I mean, other than, oh, he died in 1981. No wonder we never heard anything else. Oh, my God.
Oh, was that who did that?
Yeah, Judd Strunk did Daisy a Day.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's so cute.
He remembers the first time he met her. He remembers the first thing she said. He remembers the first time he held her. And the night that she came to his bed.
Yep. I'll give you a Daisy a Day. Yeah, well, but I didn't realize he died. All right, well, shows you what I keep up with. And so he's a guy from Buffalo, actually. And he wound up appearing on things like Laugh-In and stuff like that. But
oh, wow.
He wrote and recorded Daisy a Day. So that was his song. And
it's just, you know, it's just so romantic.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny because he was singing that while he was on the last years of Laugh-In. So
wow, okay, that's not quite the fit that I was.
Yeah, and he wound up, you know, being a hero in Maine, and narrowly lost an election because he would do those fictitious sporting events on Laugh-In directly from Farmington, Maine, Spats capital of the world.
Oh, is that the guy that did that?
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Okay, I remember those, yes.
Probably the song, most people who don't remember Daisy a Day do remember The Biggest Parakeets in Town.
Oh, yes.
Exactly. So, yeah, but I had no idea that, let's see, oh, it was a plane. Oh, man. He, in 1981, suffered a heart attack just after takeoff in an aircraft at Carabasset Valley Airport. Plane flipped over, fell 300 feet, killed him instantly, along with his passenger, Dick Ayotte, a long-term friend and businessman. He was 45. Wow.
Oh, man.
I don't know how I don't know how I missed that. Yeah.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, but right, the biggest parakeets in town. Yeah. Daisy a Day was, that was, it wasn't as big here as, like, it was number one in Australia. It was number three in Canada. But here, it only got to number 33 on the country charts and 14 on the pop charts.
Oh, wow. I wasn't even sure if it was a hit here because I think I only heard it. I think a friend of mine had it and played it, and then, I don't know, I heard it once on some station at 3 o'clock in the morning,
yeah,
but other than that, you know.
It was a hit, you know, real, and it was a big AC hit, too, you know, those pop adult stations would play it.
Oh, yeah, I could, definitely see that.
Yeah.
Oh, what can I say? I'm a sucker for a sappy love song.
Well, sure, absolutely. Well, why not? Good deal.
So, okay, well, I guess that's all I got.
Well, it's very good. I'm glad for the votes.
I was trying to think of some of the ones that had been voted on, but...
Well, I might review some of those titles tomorrow night because we'll see, but we've got a big tie here that we've just got to break.
Yeah, and I know you don't want to say what they are because that would, you know...
Well, exactly. It sort of does, but on the other hand, I might have to because I think there's 30 records here.
Oh, my God, yeah. You're going to have to do something, definitely.
Yeah, so we'll see. Carol's my official tabulator because she's good at this stuff. Carol's work ethic, everything has to be good. My work ethic, everything has to be good enough. So
I share that.
Yeah, right, exactly. Oh, that's good enough. Yeah, right, exactly right. All right, well, thanks, Fran. Appreciate it.
Sure. Bye.
Okay, so we'll pick it up there in the waning moments. We got tomorrow night and Thursday night full shows. Three big hours, both tomorrow night and Thursday night, starting right at 10 o'clock Central. So if you don't get in tonight, well, you got two more chances this week alone right here on WGN Radio. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Well, there's more cookies, and you rarely heard that one. Yeah, if you thought girls grow faster than boys do was rare. Yeah, Softly in the Night, even more so. I've got a dozen more just like them, I'll spare you. All right, so 888-876-5593 takes us to Valerie in Warrenville. What's up with your voting?
The ones that people have been talking about tonight. The Goofus thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
That gets a vote. Was there one called Crunk?
Called what?
Crunk?
No, we had Judd Strunk doing Daisy a Day.
I'm not familiar with that one, so...
All right.
Okay. We won't do that one. Interesting. And everyone that the Carpenters ones.
Which Carpenters are we talking about?
The ones that got put into the list tonight, I want to double them.
Okay. Good deal.
okay. Has anybody done Love Potion number 9?
You can.
Yes.
All right. Love Potion number 9. I believe that Ruth had put that down for one of hers.
Yeah. Chantilly Lace by Big Bopper.
Ah, good choice.
Then Valari, the one by, I don't have the full names. The initials are DM.
Oh, Valari, Domenico Modugno. The song is Nel Blu de Pinto de Blu.
Yeah. There was the one that was, one of the artists was, his initials were DM and another artist. And it was a duet.
Well, the big hit was Domenico Modugno, and like I say, it was Nel Blu de Pinto de Blu. It wasn't until Bobby Rydell and Dean Martin and people like that called it Valari.
Yeah, I only...
You've ended the show. I'll talk to you later. Okay, thanks. Yeah, now I've got literally 10 seconds, and I don't know if she can do it, but we're going to find out. So, Ruth, I've got about 7 seconds. What songs did you request the other night? I forget. I said I'd play one of them.
I can't remember them.
All right, well, if
I
you do, call
tonight, Count Every Star, The Longest Time.
Okay, I got to talk to you tomorrow night. Like I say, I meant 7 seconds. All right, so we'll pick it up at 10 o'clock tomorrow night. Until then, we apologize to James on the South Side and to Ruth and everybody else. But that's why we have tomorrow night. So until then, that's a wrap. I'm Raleigh James, and we thank Adam for keeping us on the air and John for screening your calls. 21 hours from now, I'll talk to you again on WGN Radio.